NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss this bubble playoff talk. And right now it's bubbling over. Okay, that was corny. But last night, we are going to start with last night. Last night we had a really good game between the Clippers and the Nuggets. It could have really went either way in the fourth quarter. Kind of felt like Denver was going to, at times, run away with it once they got up to 8-10, but, you know, Clippers pulled it together, ended up getting it done. We're going to break down that game. We're also going to talk a little bit, about the other game that went on last night, the game five. So we'll talk about that, the Toronto-Boston series, which feels like that game three really turned around that series, obviously. We assume that Miami's going to close it out tonight. We also assume that, we're going to preview and predict what goes on tonight with the Lakers in Houston. Big ball against small ball, let's put it that way. So we're going to break all this stuff down, and we're going to focus in on the series too, the next couple of games as well, and break down the series and banter back and forth. And these game fours, I just said it off air, the game fours in the two Western Conference series, I know that we still have a game three, you know, tonight, but it's hard not to think that those game fours could be won at home by both these teams, no matter what happens tonight with Houston. But anyway, we are going to get into this stuff in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and download the show directly from there or listen into the browser right there. If you don't want it, you can find this show, the NBA show, under the Ropeadope Radio Podcast on Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, really all across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And one more thing before we dip into this stuff here. I got something for you. If you've cut the cord, you're not happy, or you're thinking about cutting the cord, I use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They do have the 7-day free trial just to try it out. Once you decide you want to go with it, the plans start as low as $55 a month. There's no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And right now, if you sign up, 30-day free trial of HBO Max. Now, here's another layer to a deal. If you sign up for AT&T TV Now Max package, that already includes the HBO Max, and it gives you a free month of Showtime, which is $11 a month regularly. So AT&T TV Now, like I said, live streaming cable. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and pass the mic to my co-host Marshall just to see how he's doing. I know he's a teacher, so they're going through some COVID protocols today and all that good stuff. How you doing, buddy?
I'm happy to be talking sports. I think today at work was necessary, and I think that our district is trying to make school super safe, and knock on wood, it'll stay that way. I mean, you can't predict the future, especially with 2020. we might be back to lockdown in a month for all we know, but not too bad. My dad came down to visit this weekend. We played a lot of golf. A lot of swearing, not a whole lot of good shots, but you know, that's how golf goes. So it's been a pretty good weekend, and we've been so spoiled with sports, Chris. Now the NFL's back in 2 days. So we got playoff basketball, hockey, basketball, baseball is like kind of already in a playoff anyways. It's a beautiful time for sports. That is the one thing that's been keeping me from not thinking about COVID, just is watching sports nonstop. And To talk about basketball, we've been pretty spoiled just overall basketball. It's been good. The product has been good. I think Silver's done everything about as well as he can. I will say, for kind of like a side note, I did find it very odd, though, Chris, that the players could bring their wives and girlfriends or children. And I believe the referees were allowed to bring one spouse or friend. But Malone went off about how coaches did not get the same people allowed to be brought in privileges as players did. And that is maybe the one knock on silver I've had since this pandemic started. It's like, so why can Fred Van Fleet have his three kids and a wife come stay with him, but Mike Malone can't, for example, have his wife and kids? Like, that's the maybe the one strike, which, again, I think is a compliment to Silver for how he's handled this. But I don't see why you limit coaches' families, because they're just as much of a part of this as anything else. But you don't limit players. That's maybe the one biggest, like, kind of like, what the hell were you thinking, Silver plan? Because, again, it's people need to see their families. So I don't know why you limit coaches. That seemed kind of weird to you, too.
Yeah, you know, it's the first time I'm hearing of it, actually. I missed that detail. I can see if it's a 70-some-year-old coach like we have there, right? But sure. Other than that, yeah, that doesn't seem to line up at all. I mean, they got to go to their hotel room anyway. It's not like they're I don't know. Yeah, that's really strange. I mean, it doesn't line up at all.
It was super weird because I saw it said Malone goes off on rant about people coming to visit. And I was like, well, hold on here. Like, I just saw pictures of players, like, seeing their families. But the coaching people were not allowed to bring as many guests in. And I don't know what the rationale is. Maybe I can't see good rationale, because if you're worried about the disease spreading, you know, that the players are just as likely to bring in someone who could be offering it. So I guess that's strike one. And again, I think that's a really dumb decision. But again, if that's strike one of Adam Silver's now choice processes over the last couple months, again, it's a compliment to him. But this one didn't quite add up. So besides the Mike Malone rant, one other side note, then we'll get into the games more. But I am really kind of thinking, and I'm not, and I'll say this and I'll preface this, I'm not feeling a whole lot of sympathy overall for these athletes, because they're doing what they love. They're still getting paid a lot. And, you know, there's lots of people battling mental health issues and all sorts of side effect issues from this. So,
yeah.
But just overall, just if you ignore the regular life effects of COVID, I'm surprised, Chris, that we're still only down to 8 teams. Like, I feel like we've been watching bubble basketball for a long time. And as a fan, I'm happy. But, you know, hockey's down to 4, and I feel like the hockey playoffs have been just as much of a grind, and same with basketball. But I think, going back to my main point, I know we disagree on this, was I think they maybe should have had a best of 5 for the first round, because I'm not saying these guys are bored, but I really feel like we're getting to the point now where it's like, if I'm as a basketball fan thinking, man, how many more games do these guys have left to win a title? Those guys got to be going through the grind. And again, I'm not complaining for NBA players who get paid millions, but holy shit, I feel like they've been in the bubble for a long time. And if you want to get a ring on your finger, you still got a couple people to knock out. Do you think that this has gone on a little bit long, or would you just, or think that my take is a little off topic?
Well, it's not off topic. It's a decent point. I wouldn't like fight it majorly, but
sure.
I think you could keep the 2-month intact playoff, in a handful of, like, within 5 days or so, we're going to be down to the conference finals. And, you know, hockey generally is always in front of by a handful. You know, they usually start a little earlier, too. But usually in front of that, I don't know. I mean, yeah, after a while being in the bubble, that's cool. But we've already eliminated, you know, if you look, we started with how many teams? 22?
True. Yeah.
So technically we have eliminated, you know, and some are about to be eliminated. that's true. I don't know. I think it's, you know, it is what it is. I'm more stuck on why the hell couldn't a coach have his family or a friend or whatever, as long sure. as it's not an Instagram model or maybe like Farmers Only or something like that, you know, for the older generation in the coaching sphere. But nah, I wouldn't have had it any shorter, because then you have those, oh, it's cheapening it, oh, it's not a real championship, you know, all that stuff. I think they can buck up. They've had a lot of time, you know, away from the bubble, too, if you think about it, since late March. You know, they had a several months to just chill with their family and all that too, something that they normally wouldn't have been able to do, and now they actually get to see him. So yeah, I mean, I hear your point. I just don't necessarily think I would change the format because of it. And speaking of the format, we are in the second round, and we got some stuff to talk about. Now, we are going to talk about that other game that happened yesterday with Toronto and all that. You know, we'll explain, or we'll talk about that series. But I do want to jump on last night, since it's really fresh content, the close game with the Clippers and the Nuggets. If you'd like a game two, Denver got off to a great start, 14-2. Like 5 minutes in, they were up 21-9. L.A. had a really rough start, 1-for-10, you know, from the field. They did kind of pick it up, only to see it smacked right back in their face. It was 44-25 after that first quarter. Nuggets got all the way up to 23. And it's funny because the Clippers actually at the time, and somewhere in the second quarter of that game, they were shooting 46%, but they had 10 turnovers. And that was a big key. The Clippers once again got back into it with a 14-3 run, but didn't do enough to close out the half and really couldn't ever catch all the way up. Denver's defense was leading the transition buckets. The three-pointer was falling. I'd say the second half, kind of cold shooting from both. But to me, Grant was a key as far as defense down the stretch in that game. And you're looking at a 1-1 game. Now, last night, obviously you had a variety of players playing really well. The Joker played just phenomenal. Really well played first half. Both teams shooting over 56%. Clippers were up 33-32. Denver kind of, you know, took over the lead, got it up by 10. And at half, though, this whole game was a back and forth, a lot of lead changes and whatnot. But I liked how the Clippers just kept battling back and have an 8 or 10-0 run. And next thing you know, it's 59-57 at half. Kawhi, you know, 8 for 11 at the time. Joker had 25 points at that time. Playoff P was playing like Playoff P. And I remember Porter had that nasty-ass dunk, 16 points off the bench. And, you know, L.A. just kept rallying back when it looked like the Nuggets were going to stretch the lead again. But at the point, somewhere in the third quarter, they had already been 12 ties and 9 lead changes. So going in to that fourth quarter, Marshall, 88-84, Denver gets out quick and gets up 97-90. And you're like, okay, they better do something. And L.A. came storming back. George at the time was 5 of 7 from 3 to pull into the lead 98-97, and they just didn't look back from there.
Yeah, Denver got super cold, and it wasn't because of, well, I would say the Clippers defense locked in late down the stretch, but in that moment you're talking about, Chris, from like the 8-minute mark to the 4-minute mark, you saw Murray, Grant, Jokic, they were missing a lot of high quality looking shots that weren't dropping. Hell, I think Grant missed almost like 3 wide open threes in a row. And again, that's a lot of pressure. He's not their number 1 or 2 player, or even their top 4 player offensively, but you can't miss open threes when you're trying to upset a team. That's something where the Mavericks had, you know, flashes of Hardaway and Burke who were not missing open shots to beat the Clippers. And maybe that, though, maybe to some extent, though, maybe that could be the Clippers' game plan of, hey, we're going to stop Jokic and Murray and make Jeremy Grant beat us. So I don't know. But it was a close game. The Nuggets got cold, and Kawhi and Lou Williams did their part. And it was just, like you said, it was a wrap. I was thinking as you were breaking this down, I wonder if I think it's either two things. Either the Clippers aren't quite as good as Vegas thinks they are because they are the favored team to win the title, or they're kind of still going through the motion and waiting for LeBron, because they've played 9 games now. They're 6-3, and they've had 2 blowout wins. But let's just compare them across the conferences. Look at the Heat. the Heat, and I go, it's different opponents, but the Heat taking care of business. They're 7-1, and they're about to close out the Bucks. Like, I don't know, Chris, if we're seeing either the Clippers have not quite restored maybe the fluidness they had during the year, or maybe they're a good team, but they're not great. I feel going into the bubble, it was like Kawhi and Vegas and everything. Oh, they're the best squad, but I've not seen a consistency of even two games in a row of where you're seeing, hey, this Clippers team is legit. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely legit, but you're right. There is something not quite there. Urgency, maybe the way they're carrying themselves, like we've already done this before. I also agree with the national media all season long. We all know when the trades and the signings and all this stuff happened in the summer, we all knew that the Clippers had an advantage for a while anyway, because they already had a bench that played with each other, and then they just plug in the two dudes, and one of them, Leonard, can just be plugged into anything, sure, and he's going to get his. You don't. It's not something where he needs the ball in his hands all the time from Jump Street. So I understand that part. In playoff Pete, although he struggled a lot of times in the playoffs with Oakland. OKC, he obviously was a stud, in the early 2000s or early 10s, I should say, with the Pacers in many of those series. So against the Heat, you know, they had him down 3-2, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, I agree. There's just something. It's almost like, yeah, we're supposed to be here. Yeah, we're going to get this done. There is something missing to where, you know, and maybe it is the bubble. Maybe something has to do, you know, there. How much percentage-wise is the bubble? I don't know. But similar to what I think about game fours coming up in these two West series, I think that plays into it. I also think that they have, to be fair, we pointed out the Lakers, you know, missing Avery Bradley. Rondo's come back. Maybe they should just put his ass in the starting lineup. I don't know. But, you know, maybe without Beverly for a while there in between, and now it does seem like they're solid with him. But I know what you mean. They're not – they're just not 100%, yeah, they got it, dude. There's not much that's going to be able to, you know, take place. And maybe – something that we've mentioned since we've been back on the show in the last month, maybe it's just a two-star league again, you know, and we just forgot about this stuff because we have a two-star league now.
Yeah, you know, and I guess just kind of wrap up my Clippers point here is that to me it seemed that it's been a lot of pressure on Lou Williams. And I know that part of this is just considering the Paul George effect, and he had an awful series against the Mavericks, but I've been watching a lot of moments where obviously Kawhi can get his mid-range jumper, which is almost automatic. But whether it's been in the Dallas game or Dallas series or even this Nuggets series, there's been a lot of times where whether it's middle, third quarter, Kawhi's on the bench, even with Paul George on the court, it really seems like it becomes the Lou Williams moment to shine. And he does that. He can score almost effortlessly. He's a hell of a basketball player. He's maybe one of the few guys I respect on the team. But yeah, it just seems like they're not quite clicking yet, and maybe they just have in their heads, "Hey guys, it's just about us and LeBron. Like let's get there." And obviously the Lakers have shown their signs of weakness too. But yeah, I just wonder if we're going to see a different squad. Maybe Kawhi hasn't shown his full inner Kawhi mode because he did that last year in my Warriors and he ended our season. So yeah, I think we're on the same page there. Of this, they could be the best team in the league, but they've not taken care of business like the Miami Heat have, for example. Now, let me ask you this then, Chris. Do you think the Nuggets win another game in this series? Do you think maybe this could be like a 4-2 kind of series win like Dallas had with them? I think Murray and Jokic might be able to pull another one off. I don't think they'll win the series, but I'd be surprised if the Clippers had two more good showings to knock off the Nuggets.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll go 6, maybe 7, but for sure 6. And you know, I like I said, I do think they would win game 4 at home. I think they'd win game 4. I wouldn't just give it to them. Obviously, you can't do that. But I think that's where the bubble percentage, whatever that is, as far as making a difference, does. And I definitely would pick them game 4. Now, I don't know. But yeah, I agree. I think that they'll be able to I think they'll be able to push it to 6. So I see 4-2 for for the Clips. And it is funny how, you know, Kawhi gets so much less slander for going like 4-17. And if you look at some of these fourth quarters, the last two games, it's been downright ugly from him.
Yeah.
And the amount of slander he doesn't get, but then, you know, LeBron, of course, you know, going 7-15, putting up a 28-7, and AD going 10-18 and a 25-13, and somehow, or 10, I forgot what it is, 10-16 or something like that. But somehow we got to blame them for everything. And, you know, let's not even get into last year, because championships count, but we all know that Toronto wouldn't have won that championship if it wasn't for the injuries. But would they have treated LeBron the same exact way like that? I don't know. But yeah, some of these fourth quarters have been downright ugly, dude. I mean,
yeah, and for him. Maybe, yeah, you're right. And I know part of it's his personality. The dude's chill, quiet, and the media never really attacks him much. But he does completely deserve to be ripped on, because he's had some quarters where he's gone away. Maybe one.
Well, real quick,
go ahead.
So game two, 0 points, 0-3, didn't take a three either in the fourth quarter. Game three, 5 points, 1-7, 0-3. He also had 6 assists in those two games, but he had 4 turnovers. So, you know, you can have a great block and a great pass, like this tweet says, actually, but there's also way, you know, fourth quarter is when you turn it on. And these were important games.
Yeah, and I guess just for one nugget, and we'll go to the Lakers. God, that's how corny as hell. That wasn't even on purpose. Holy shit. For one nugget on the Nuggets, I do think that in a couple of years, Chris's team could be super good. Like, Jokic is still young and obviously very talented. Murray has moments where he can be a series all-star. Porter has flashing potential to be a freakish offensive talented player. You have my guy from Morris, Iowa State. Like, you know, I think they have the pieces there. It does seem like at sometimes their game really becomes almost too easy to guard. Like, I feel there's moments where if Jokic gets pressured, he's passing the ball to people who are not quite maybe as like well surrounded, like of the Warriors. Like, the Warriors teams, just to talk to my teams, like they were such a profound team where if you made the correct pass, you were giving up an open shot. That's not just for Curry or Clay. But I feel that the Nuggets have the pieces in place. I don't think it's there yet, but if you keep the core they have now and add a little more shooting and a little more maturity from those players, they have a hell of a good squad going forward. They really do. It just might be a couple years away, or maybe a couple, like you bring in an Iguodala kind of guy like the Warriors did, bring in a veteran to help them out, because it's there. I just think they're a little too soon for their big run at it.
Yeah, that is a good point. And even look back 2 years ago when the Timberwolves with Jimmy Buckets, by the way, Timberwolves hadn't made the playoffs in, 14 years? Then Jimmy came to town. But we won't get into that. Oh, we already did. But no, 2 years ago, we knocked him out of the playoffs. And if you look at the records of us and them and just, you know, how much they've advanced, it may not even be a few years. It may be literally a year or two. Now, obviously, if the Lakers and Clippers stay the same way they are with who they got, it's going to be tough slaying, obviously. Sure. They're going to be hoping for a tournament, a 16 tournament is what they're going to be hoping for in the future, which isn't impossible, by the way, you know, where they just seed everything instead of how they seed it right now. Before we go to tonight's game, though, with the Lakers and Rockets and kind of break down game two in that series, let's just clean up some of this Toronto-Boston stuff because, you know, last night the Celtics took care of business 111-89. This series should be over. In game three, you know, Kemba went off in game two. Clutch down the stretch. And then it really looked like clutch down the stretch. Kemba had that great clutch pass with 0.5 seconds left. And then Lowry had his own nice pass. They hit a three. Was it OG that hit a three?
Yeah.
Yep. And next thing you know, we got a series. And I really think that mental block had something to do with I mean, Chirano played really well. Ibaka is a guy I really want to pinpoint to. Same with Lowry. He stepped up his game, almost had a triple-double. But I can't help to think that that game three mentally blocked him in game four. Like, dude, we should be up 3-0. And even though they took care of business, it felt like last night should have been a closeout game.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when we were previewing the series, I said, you know, you got to bet on Toronto. And but then I also looked at how the season series was won by Boston pretty convincingly 2-1 with those two wins being massive blowout wins. And in, you know, and even start off the series, game one wasn't close. Like, you know, game two wasn't really that close. Like the Boston's just a better team, at least, you know, for how they match up. I could see easily Toronto beating either Milwaukee or Miami. But for their matchup, they kind of got screwed with the seeding. Like this was the one team they maybe did not want to play. But yes, I think it gets over soon. The Boston just has a really nice defensive game plan that limits how Toronto wants to play. Like the Toronto games I saw in the bubble, where it's kind of a quicker pace, move around the perimeter offense with a bunch of bigs who can shoot effectively for Toronto, Boston just does a really good job of limiting that. And it took a Lowry going off in game four to give him a 7-point win. It's a tough matchup. Last night they got smoked again. I'd be very surprised, Chris, if this thing went to seven. It's just a really bad matchup. But as much as I keep saying, I also have to give Boston credit. Clearly, if I'm going to back Toronto, right, saying, oh, they're a hell of a bubble team, well, they might be. But hell, the Celtics have the better players in this series. That's been proven consistently. And maybe
they want household... the bubble to be shortened, like
yeah,
you said earlier.
Yeah. So I think maybe even though they're not completely household names yet, but Tatum and Brown, and I know most people know Kemba, they have a hell of a squad. And they're not really missing out Hayward. I don't think I'm sure they would like to have him on the team, but they're playing good ball. I'd be very surprised if there was a game seven in this series.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think it'll close out. Now on to tonight, we have game three, Lakers-Houston, game one. Houston shot 48%. Harden went for 36. Gordon went for 23. Oh, this guy named Russ, he went for 24 and 6 assists. Huh, Rivers came off the bench, did really nicely. I think the first 9 points of the fourth quarter were Gordon, and that's where the game was won, really. They just ran it, 16-3 run. Rondo returned and played okay. Caruso actually had a pretty good game, but Houston just played great. And also, I kind of forgot that it had been the Lakers in 11 days, because there was that minor gap before the playoffs started too. They that was only their second game in 11 days. That kind of threw me off. But then I did the math, because that longer, the 4 days off anyway, I was like, oh, I suppose that's true. So maybe some of that was that. I don't know. What I do know is they started out really, really well, you know, in the first part of the game. I mean, they were all over the place. Morris, who, by the way, you know, maybe Rondo or Morris or both should be in the starting lineup, but he went 4-for-4 early. Rondo had like 5 assists before you knew it. The Lakers were up 36-20. House played pretty well, I'll say that. He might need to get in the game a little bit more. It's 67-51. At half, the Lakers look like, all right, it's time. We're going to take this thing over. The first game, whatever. But I noticed, like, was it his groin? Davis's groin looked like it bothered him for a little bit when he went down with a spill. But then it got a little better. But the Lakers were just clicking. Next thing you know, literally minutes into the third quarter, 9-0 run. Gordon hits 2 early threes, had 19 points real early. And they turned that into a 33-13 run. And I'm saying, hey, can you put Morris in the game? Where's Morris at this point? And they took over the lead. Then it kind of turned into back and forth, of course. And the Lakers, you know, eventually did get it to 98-94. a few minutes into that quarter. But they had to really grind this thing out to get it done. And Tucker has played really good. He played another good game. No big surprise there. But the Lakers kind of got their shit together, I think, in game two. But also what we're going to have to keep talking about, and it's something that we've talked about since they put this team together, the small ball. They were already kind of going small ball anyway. Covington coming together, he's played really well. He fits that you know, that thing perfect. But what was it, 0-6 or 0-7? Westbrook took like 7 threes last night, or the night before. It's time we need to see Russ aggressive, dude. Otherwise, it's just a problem. It's just a problem.
Yeah, he statistically, he's an awful 3-point shooter. It just, but it's been that bad for like 7 or 8 years. So, you know, and I'm sure there's kind of like that screw you moment of they keep giving me this open three, I got to make them pay for it. When you make them pay for it and it's under like 20%, like you really got to check yourself and say, am I benefiting my team? You know, I'll just quickly use like Draymond was not, he's not a great 3-point shooter, but when teams would test him in the playoffs, he would hit a clutch three. Or same with Iguodala. Like they're not Stephen Clay, but they would make clutch shots. And I'm sure Kerr's like, dude, if they're going to give it to you, take it, but don't take a lot. I think that the Westbrook thing is they keep giving them to him and he keeps missing them. And you're playing a team that you do need to, like, this is not a walkthrough. Like, you're the underdog in the series. So why not attack the lane when you're as quick as you are? I mean, unless LeBron or Anthony Davis are guarding you, you should be able to get to the rack and going for a layup or dish it out and kick. Like, you're obviously a really hard person to cover. So why not drive to the lane? You're probably going to draw a double team or get someone to use help defense. Now you make a pass out, but he plays at such a high motor, and you know, that's always, people love to give him that excuse too. Well, he plays so hard and quick. Well, but playing hard and quick really doesn't give you a free pass for turnovers. Or, right. You know, he had a huge mental turnover that cost him a game against Oklahoma City. Like, and he just keeps doing these things.
7 but, in the last game too.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, how are you helping the team? And in fairness, I have heard more media people have been giving Westbrook a hard time because he is putting his team in hard spots offensively. Now, is he going to give you the full effort? Yes. Is he going to help you out defensively? Sure. But when you're hurting your offense for an offense that's really based around, I would say, smart passing perimeter shots, it does make you kind of wonder, like, that puts D'Antoni in kind of a weird spot. I'm sure there'd be freaking backlash like crazy on him if he benched Westbrook a little or took away minutes, but
right.
it's been a common theme. And if a lot of people in the media are suggesting, do the Rockets need him on offense? That's a weird spot for a coach to be put in. For the game itself, I still think you got LeBron and Davis, if healthy. I think that's really hard for them to work on. I've not seen as much of this series as quite as much of the others, but it does strike me that I think that LA should really just be able to take advantage of their height. That was something they did really good in the first round, where I thought that they just did a lot of alley-oops. They used McGee, they used Howard. Obviously LeBron can still get to the rack pretty easily. I think that if you focus on just alley-oops, using post-ups, rotating between Davis, Howard, McGee, like, I'm not sure how the Rockets really match that. I guess you could say, Chris, hey, we'll give up the dunks and we'll hit our threes. I guess that's our strategy. But just with having so many, I guess, like, decently talented bigs, really think Houston would have to really struggle, or I should say Houston's going to have to shoot the ball really well to consistently stay in the games. And maybe I'm being too hard on Houston, but I just don't think – I think if you're LA and you have a smart game plan, you shouldn't blow this series.
Yeah, I mean, if you're big, play big. I mean, that's exactly it. They're going small. Well, you don't need to meet them. I mean, can you at times? Sure. If things are going really bad, sure. But they haven't really been going bad in either of these two games. And just to kind of add to what you said about Westbrook, 4 of 15, I was wrong. He did hit a 3, 1 of 7. Had 13 boards, no doubt about it. Had 4 assists, but had 7 turnovers. 10 points, minus 14. But you look at P.J. Tucker, 18 and 11. Covington, 4 of 8 from 3, had 17. Gordon, 6 of 12 from 3, 24. Harden, 4 for 8, had 27. House had 13 off the bench. Yeah, I mean, it should be the opposite. Since you have all these shooters, Westbrook, put your head down and see what happens. It's not like you don't know how to pass really well, because he does, and that's something that the last 3 to 4 years we've given him a lot of credit, because he actually did show he could spread everything. But in this one, they need you to go to the rack and pass the ball or try to finish at the hole, because you got to do it. And I agree, you got to get closer to the bucket. I think between Davis and James, it should be bully ball. McGee did get a little banged up. You wonder how that's going to work with that big rotation. But Rondo had 9 assists, 4 of them really early last night. He looked really good, 10 and 9. 5 steals, 2. Plus 28 for Rondo. Morris, 4 of 5 and 3. It does kind of make me feel like, you know, maybe they should just go with Rondo. But I know they like Cadwell being able to hit the 3 from time to time. He's just so streaky. And I just think their defense is better without or with him in the lineup. But, yeah, I think they'll win. Do you think it'll go 7? Obviously, Game 3 is a pivotal game. The percentages they're putting up right now with that 72 or 73% that they keep popping up in Game 3s, I think you can take some percentage points off of that because of the bubble, of course.
Sure.
And Game 5, to me, stands out even more now, just because then there's only 2 left after that. I think that helps. Do you think this thing's going to go 7, or you think they'll get it done before that? Because like I said, I really think Denver and Houston would have a great shot at winning Game 4 had they have the actual home court advantage and not just some pumped-in sound noise.
I do think that I'm going to say I think these both go 6 for both L.A. teams. I do think that Houston has another hot night. I don't think their Game 1 win was a fluke. I think we'd easily see another night where the L.A. role players play like trash. There's been some nights where, and I love Danny Green, he's a Tar Heel that won me a title, but there's been nights where KCP and Danny Green can't hit buckets at all. And then you're literally just telling LeBron and AD to do everything. And on a night like that, Harden can do enough to pull off a win. And even he himself hasn't had a great run of late. I think they sneak one more in. So I'll say the Lakers in 6, like I said about the Clippers. It's LeBron and AD. If you go a little bigger, again, who knows what Frank Vogel's decisions are. He's a lot smarter than mine. But I do think that if you focus a little more on the post, you could really hurt Houston there. And, I mean, hell, if they had cold nights against Oklahoma City,
right,
I expect those cold nights to happen again, because I would bet you that the Lakers' defense is just as good. I mean, it played great against Portland. So I think with all these factors, sneak in one more, but I think Lakers in 6, and then we probably get the matchup we've been wanting to see, unless you're a Nugget or Rocket fan. But I think Harden steals one more. I do think it's kind of annoying, and I don't know. I think there's a little bit of truth to it, but this whole Scott Foster, I think he's been making quite a name for himself. Like, Twitter was going crazy when Scott Foster was ref in Game 2. So maybe they can let him call some different series, because I saw this one thing on Twitter, and Harden, it was a picture of Harden saying, "You can't stop me." And LeBron's like saying, "Maybe I can't." But then the bottom of the picture said, "Scott Foster, yes, I can."
Right.
And he was like telling Chris Paul last series, like, "Hey, remember in Game 7 when you were for New Orleans? Like, I called that game and y'all lost it." Like, what's an NBA ref telling a star player, like, "Hey, remember when I called you Game 7 11 years ago and like y'all lost the game?"
Right.
And he's calling a foul on P.J. Tucker 13 seconds into the game across the court. Again, I'm not saying that, you know, anything shady is necessarily happening, but his name seems to keep popping up, and it's not for, like, great refereeing. Like, let's just let the guys decide it. And even though you have an agenda against the Rockets, like, that's really – now is really not your time to hammer people with foul. I mean, the whole Don Heath thing is over. Like, I'd prefer that we just keep talking about basketball and not having this more ref chat, Chris.
That's a good game, or good call. I'm glad that you brought that up. That it just, there's no place. There's just, you know.
No.
Just it's like, nah, dude, save that for like retirement or whatever. Just I'm good at that. Anyway, the other game is the Heat and Bucks. We both think that the Heat, especially without Giannis now for the Bucks, is going to close it out. When Giannis did go down, I think in the second quarter or third quarter, you know, they went off. And Middleton totally went off, obviously. I think six players in double figures. Great game, though. Back and forth. Hero kept hearing, you know, hitting threes and looking like they're going to win. Then the other, you know, so it was a great game. But I think it's really all for none. That series is over. But before he did get hurt, we talked about Kawhi. We cannot just let Giannis off the hook. He's down the stretch. This is a couple of days ago, obviously, but him in the Bucks struggling 0 for 10 from the field, 0 from 7 from 3, outscored 17-1 in the final 420, bro. But overall, the Heat outscored Milwaukee 40-13 in the fourth quarter, and it just there's this guy named Jimmy Buckets and a bunch of different players. And if you look at it, one of the games here in the last game or the game before, no, the game before, Butler had only 10 points. He made some, you know, key plays, but he didn't really have much. But then they had six other guys in double figures, seven players with 10 points, first time in franchise history. It's just one of those teams that you're like, hey, I remember saying this too. I can't believe I'm picking Miami over Milwaukee, but I am. But how much of this has to fall on the coaching, getting the ball to Giannis closer to the bucket, bully ball, all that good stuff, and, you know, his role players as well too, because you got to knock down the shots. He's definitely not going to hit the three. We know he's hurt now. We know he was a little banged up, but it does feel like this was just happening to him down the stretch of the season, the Bucks. But then Giannis a little bit too. Did we just blow him up as this once-in-a-generation type guy for the regular season game in and game out? But once you get to the playoffs, you know how to beat him, and he needs a full-on second star. I love you, Chris Middleton, but I don't know if that is that. Well, what are your thoughts here? Because there's been a lot of chatter in the last, say, 5 days about Giannis. And like I said, we now know he's hurt enough to not play, but this wasn't just one game.
No, you were down 3-0 in the series, you know, and you know, what's I guess the Fred Van Fleet beat you last year with great shooting, and now you apparently, well, healthy, got down 3-0 to the Heat. Like, I think he does deserve some criticism. We, you know, people love to rip LeBron. Kawhi, as we said, kind of gets a free pass. I think part of that's because of his personality, but that's truly not fair. Giannis, too, appears to be like, well, he's good for the game. Everyone loves him. And, you know, small market Milwaukee, but this is another year in the playoffs where his team was, I would say, expected to win the East, or if not expected, at least make the conference finals, and you're failing again. So he completely deserves some shit. And it makes people wonder, you know, Middleton gets paid the fancy contract. Is that completely deserved, or did he get overpaid? You know, I get that you want to pay people more money to keep them in small markets, but you also have to realize, hey, we're paying this guy to be a true number two. Is he earning that salary? Yeah, I don't know. Middleton's had some nice moments in the playoffs, but is he a guy like, you know, as I mentioned, hell, I even think at moments Lou Williams is the Clippers number two. Can Middleton go off and win you a game like Lou Williams did consistently? Like, is he that quick of a scoring threat? I've seen him have moments, but I don't think he jumps off table, or he's not like a Lillard or McCollum even. I think he's a great player that's probably overpaid. And you're looking out another early exit than you were expected. And part of it probably is coaching too. Like Spoelstra, I remember when we did our preview, I was like, well, Spoelstra is the better coach. I know a lot of people love Bud, but I forget who I was listening to, someone on SportsCenter or whatever, talking about how, you know, Spoelstra has made adjustments. He makes changes. Like the Bucks don't. I've not heard many people say, Chris, that the Bucks have made changes. Like, they play their defense, which gives up open threes, and they played their offense, which Antetokounmpo wants to drive to the lane, but the lane gets clogged up, and then you have no offense. Like, shit, Budenholzer deserves some crap too. Like, okay, you realize, Coach, hey, you had the best record in the NBA this year. Round of applause. But you're in the playoffs now. You're playing against a coach who has titles, who has a shitload of experience from Pat Riley and on and on and on.
Who got criticized the first year in the finals along with LeBron too, in that first year where they failed.
Hell, he even had the Heat going to the playoffs before LeBron was there. I mean, the guy's been around, you know? And so why would you not change your strategy? I get that it worked. Like, hey, we pack the paint, we give up threes, and our offense is a little shady. Like, how have you not made adjustments? Like, I mean, by no means is Milwaukee this, like, weak caliber team. You can't go, like, 50-8 in the regular season before the bubble. And then, you know, with it being a fluke, like, they were on pace. They maybe could have won 68, 69 games, maybe pushed for the Golden State record if they really put their foot to the pedal, you know. But I think it's stubbornness. I think Antetokounmpo, again, is struggling. And he's probably frustrated because he's not quite at the point yet, Chris, where he isn't quite like a Harden or a LeBron, where he can kill people with the outside perimeter game. So much of his game is driving to the bucket and making dunks and everything, and you can't have that offensive mentality in the playoffs because people will stop it. And now you're playing a team in Miami who has Bam Adebayo, who's freakishly talented. Butler's, I mean, there's so many matchups that make you want to change stuff, and they haven't appeared to change anything. And to quickly give Miami credit, hell, I think their second best player is Goran Dragic. That dude has been rock solid almost every fourth quarter of the playoffs. He runs their offense. He has a nice flow with the team. He's kind of taking away some of Kendrick Nunn's minutes, but he shoots smart shots. He's a very deeply smart veteran point guard who learned a ton from Steve Nash.
He's been around for a while doing this exact same thing.
He's just smooth with it. So, I mean, that whole Miami team, but yeah, I'm kind of rambled on long here, but I think my main point to just wrap this up, this little quick rant, is that the Bucks have not made adjustments, Chris. I think that's why you're down 3-1 and probably going to be going out the door 4-1 unless Middleton has the game of his life tonight.
Which he just had almost in parts of that game in the last one. So I think they kind of got that out of their system. If you need a bucket, there is this guy named Jimmy Buckets, and he has, look at the last 3 years, I'm just saying. I mean, come on, dude. It, after a while, where there's smoke, there's fire, sure, but was he really wrong in the Bulls and the Timberwolves situation? How's Philly doing right now? Do they need a guy that could, you know, muster up some fire in the belly and get in people's faces? I think I haven't heard much complaints about him with these guys, you know, maybe because they don't have a second or the third outright star, and that's the problem. And Jimmy's like, I'm the shit, but then again, I want, you know, I have like 8 to 9 guys that I can really rely on for a variety of things. So yeah, I mean, you know, as a basketball fan, I'd love one of these Western. I mean, I'd love them both to go 7, but I hope we get one to go 7, at least both of them go 6. Hopefully the Raptors just come together and really put up a good game tomorrow night and push that thing to 7. It feels like Boston's going to close it out, but you never know. They left the door open in game 3, so you never really know. Any final words? And if you do, go ahead and do it, and then go ahead and get us out of here, sir.
Well, just for like a fun fact with Butler and how the Heat handle him. So his like first moment, I think Van Gundy was saying this during the playoffs. I think it was Stan Van or Jeff Van, one of the Stan. He's actually a pretty good announcer. But he talked about how when Jimmy Butler got to the Heat, Pat Riley literally made him stand on a scale and had this basically say, you know, what's your weight? Like, we need to do this shit now. And Butler's like, Jesus, like, this was his, like, get to know you, like, first time you met him, like, here's your scale, this is your weight, you best be on this or we're going to have issues. And that was kind of, you know, Riley saying, hey, like, I'm the alpha here. I know you might be the alpha for our players, but, like, you're coming into an organization that is run very strong and very well, and you need to follow suit or you can get out of here. And I've heard that story so many times, Chris, throughout the years of just how Riley and Spoelstra work as a combo. And there's no, you know, they do things a little differently down there, but I've never heard much backlash from players or anything. So they must have just a really nicely ran tight ship.
That's got to be music to Jimmy's ears, though. Oh, you mean you guys will hold people responsible or they got to go? Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, and yeah, you're right. And I think that's how Van Gundy wrapped up his point. It was like, okay, Butler's coming to a franchise where everyone's held accountable, and he's going to do the same for himself. So I think that's been a perfect match, and we'll be talking more about the Heat as this show goes on. To wrap it up, again, hopefully we do get game sevens. None of us have picked them, but if life was that easy, I'd be living in a mansion driving a nice Mustang and a Ferrari. So you never know with sports. Crazier things can happen, but enjoy the basketball tonight. We'll be back next week. We'll be getting close to the conference finals, and mask up, stay safe. The boys are out tonight. Peace.